You're listening to Let's Talk Macro,
brought to you by Bandhan Mutual Fund.
Hello and welcome to Let's Talk Macro, the podcast on macroeconomics by Bandhan Mutual Fund, where we discuss interesting global and domestic macroeconomic topics and events. I'm Ahalya, your co-host, and with me, as always, is Srijith Balasubramanian, economist in the Fixed Income Fund Management team. Hi, Srijith. Welcome to the podcast. And, you know, today is not just interesting global and domestic macroeconomic topics. It's very interesting.
Yeah, I think a lot of things happening in the last 4 weeks and quite a bit of change.
I know. It's a wonder that we were able to get this episode out without the information changing, fingers crossed. To set the context, the world, global markets and the Indian economy have been dominated by just one topic in the last month. And that has, of course, been the US, Israel and Iran war. We have seen impacts of this war, not just on oil prices, but broadly across trade, travel, financial markets, you name it, and it has been impacted. And therefore, government responses and central bank commentary have poured in galore. So in today's episode, we're going to discuss the ongoing war with respect to the oil and non-oil economic linkages, the multidimensional nature of its impact, how the starting point for the global economy is a key factor, and what all of this implies for policy response, both globally and in India. So Srijith, can we start a little bit locally, I think, for all of our listeners in India? An important question is how the world and our country, India, are economically linked to the events unfolding and the region. Could you make that clear for us?
Sure. So what we can do is maybe you can just get some of the numbers clear to understand the linkages. So if you look at the world oil and gas that passes through the Strait of Hormuz, that's around 20% of the total output, which means around 7% of the total global energy supply passes through the strait. For India, if we look at the main energy sources, so if you look at one, crude oil, we import around 88 to 90% of our crude oil requirement, of which more than 50% flows through the Strait of Hormuz. Similarly, if you look at LPG, we import 65% or more of our need, of which almost 90% comes through the strait. And the other sources are the LNG, where 50% is imported, and again, 60% of that comes through the Strait of Hormuz. So for energy shipments, it is a very important route. I mean, that's understandable. Second, the West Asia and the Gulf countries account for a significant share of our trade also, right? So 13% of our exports and around 16 to 17% of our total imports are to this region. And the other linkage apart from, you know, the oil and the trade part is on the remittances side, the money that we get from the Gulf in form of remittances. So India got around $50 billion US dollars of remittances from Gulf countries last year. And that's around 38-39% of the total remittances that we received. So globally and particularly for India, the Gulf region and the Strait are economically very significant.
Yeah, very important economic linkages there that many people may not be aware of. So good that we're talking about it. Now, given these dependencies, how do you see the impact playing out in the near term and say if the war continues, which no one wants?
Okay, so the straightforward part is the impact on energy, right? Depending on the oil import basket of each country and also their storage capacity, you know, that is available. So for instance, India's crude oil basket by definition is around, you know, 75% of the Oman and Dubai for sour grades and 25% dated Brent for sweet grade. That's the definition of our basket. And therefore, the price of our basket is increased more versus the standard Brent price that we see. But again, I believe the import basket incrementally could be tweaked, and therefore the basket is, you know, more representative. So lower energy supplies and higher prices, one from the oil and also from the higher freight and insurance costs and, you know, container shortages, etc. And the insurance costs, again, incorporate higher war premiums now. So that's the sort of near-term story that we're looking at. Now, if energy infrastructure in the Gulf region gets damaged in the war, and, you know, by that what I mean is the supply gets taken out for a good while, that will be a major impact in the medium term. And that's something we have to look out for. And we also need to comprehend that the impact on non-energy goods is also quite material. So raw materials and intermediate goods that flow into various sectors get impacted, right? And that's the final products that come out of those sectors. So petrochemical products, you know, for example, like sulfur, methanol, etc., you know, they are used in various other industries. Fertilizers, you know, which use natural gas and sulfur for production. Let's say final products like plastics, fibers, paints, and various chemicals. And these are part of various sectors like, you know, FMCG, food processing, you name it, to electronics, manufacturing, and construction. So all of these can potentially get impacted. At a macro level, trade, inflation, and growth expectations get impacted by all the happenings, right? And therefore, financial markets, like what we have been seeing across stocks, bonds, and currencies, in turn react to that. Of course, all this depends on how long the war prolongs and the impact it leaves the world with. And one other thing that we need to remember is all that this is not just a price shock, but, you know, it's also a supply shock. I mean, right. I'm sort of stating the obvious, but we need to keep that in mind. So if it continues, lower supply will impact production and growth along with higher prices, you know, and that higher prices will also kill some demand. But again, eventual consumer price impact, inflation impact will depend on company profit margins and the pass-through to consumers.
So direct effect on oil and other energy goods, but also the impact on non-energy input and output, which do impact price, production, and financial markets. I mean, this is just a great reminder that everything is interlinked, right, for the most part. Now, we have spoken before about the macro setup in India and for the global economy. How does that place us to face the shock from the war, Shijit?
Yeah, so that's an important question because starting point really matters, right? So most major central banks, like we have spoken before, were closer to the end of their rate cut, the interest rate cut cycle. So that's a better position to react to inflationary pressures, right? Than when, let's say, the shock occurs at a higher point in the rate cycle. In the US, you see, for example, markets were still expecting around 2 rate cuts by the Fed. I mean, 2026, that is, to support the labor market, despite core inflation being sticky and, you know, support for growth from AI and fiscal stimulus. This has really changed now in the last 4 weeks. So in the US and Europe, if you see, bond yields have risen and the market is now pricing in multiple rate hikes this year. So this implies the inflation impact is being given priority by the market. Now, if you look at central banks, the mandate of central banks is to target inflation. So they'll look at oil and non-oil prices, whether it is a rather a short supply shock episode or it has, you know, second round and persistent effects on inflation, how longer term inflation expectations are moving and so on. So they look at these multiple things. And in particular, inflation expectations could possibly be, you know, a little more sensitive this time because the world has already experienced multiple price shocks, you know, from the pandemic, Russia, Ukraine war and so on. So all this is coming on the back of that. Unlike, say, a few years ago when, you know, we had a price shock for the first time. Mm-hmm. So based on the central bank's assessment, they will decide on the choice and the order of policy tools, you know, be it rate action or guidance or both and so on. But given monetary policy acts with long and variable lags, again, the duration of the war and the expected macro impact, even after the war stops, you know, those will be important considerations.
Right. So most central banks were actually closer to the low point in the rate cycle, and higher bond yields and rate expectations now reflect markets' inflation concerns, while central bank action should depend on the duration and macro impact of the war and their assessment of second round inflation pass through. Now on India, how does our starting point matter? And what do you think the policy reaction function could be?
Okay, so if you look at India, we run one of the highest services trade surpluses among most emerging markets. Mm-hmm. And that has lowered our current account deficit in recent years. Again, we've spoken about this before. But our goods trade deficit is relatively high, right? And its capital account has, you know, faced a challenging situation in the last 2 years, particularly since the second half of last year, as global capital has followed higher global bond yields and economies with you know, lesser potential hit from AI to the services sector. Now, with geopolitics now in the mix, external accounting pressures have increased. So if we compare our trade structure also in general with other emerging markets that run a current account deficit, you know, India stands out with a high primary commodity trade deficit. And that's just not just oil, but also other commodities. So as far as RBI's reaction goes, it has already been doing OMO bond purchases heavily, you know, even last year from early 2025. And even USD-INR, those buy-sell swaps to manage currency volatility and to offset the liquidity drain that has been happening. Again, we have discussed that and how the RBI has moved to a more proactive and preemptive liquidity management policy. And it's stressed on this fact in the previous policy as well. So the starting point for India is already about external account pressures and RBI intervention. Now, just the way global rates have moved up, India's, if you look at, for instance, the OIS market has also pricing in rate hikes by the RBI this year. based on potential inflation impact. You know, that's quite understandable and fair.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, RBI has continued its OMR purchases and FX market intervention like before. It's really a question of how much the RBI needs to do further. One, how much they let the exchange rate become the shock absorber again, right? Because with a weaker exchange rate, imports become more expensive and that sort of curtails demand. So you have to let that mechanism work to some extent versus defending the currency. So that's one question. And second is with respect to their intervention in the bond market, that is OMOs, how much they should let the yields adjust to new macroeconomic realities, because global bond yields have already moved up even before the war, and they're going to be even higher. So these are the two questions that the RBI will probably be debating internally. And on the fiscal side, if you see any sort of fiscal policy support, be it adjustments to retail fuel prices, higher subsidies, that is fuel and fertilizer subsidies, or any sector-specific support, that has to be within the new debt-to-GDP framework adopted this union budget. And that framework is to get the debt-to-GDP to 50% plus or minus 1 of GDP by FY31, and that's in 5 years. So, but again, if you see the new GDP series that got released last month, the numbers have changed, and therefore the starting point for the debt-to-GDP number in FY26 it's already been revised up by 2 percentage points. So the fiscal consolidation that is needed over the next 5 years was already higher, even before the war started. So one needs to really assess the space that is available closely. But again, both monetary and fiscal policy response will depend on the duration of the war and the macro impact that it leaves the world with.
Yeah, absolutely. Another important point that you've brought up there, Srijit, which is that external account pressures and RBI intervention had already begun in the bond and currency markets even before the war had started. And while RBI support is still ongoing, the question is really how much more? And finally, fiscal policy support, if and when required, will need to be utilized wisely. You know, this is the topic of conversation we could go on and on talking about, but with the rate things are changing, we're going to leave it at that for now. And it's time for me to summarize the key takeaways before we close the episode. So listen up. First, globally and for India, the Gulf and the Strait of Hormuz are economically significant. This is not just about oil, but also about trade in various other goods and even remittances from the region. Apart from the near-term issue of lower supply and higher price of oil, non-energy goods linked to multiple sectors can also be impacted. Expectations of higher inflation and lower growth can strengthen if the war continues, in turn impacting financial markets. Second, the starting point before the onset of the war matters. So most major central banks were closer to the end of their rate cut cycle, which puts them in a better position to react to inflationary pressures. In the last 4 weeks, bond yields have risen and multiple rate hikes are being priced in. Central banks' policy response will depend on their assessment of second round inflationary impact and change in inflation expectations. And finally, for India, a primary commodity importer among emerging markets having a current account deficit, the starting point was already about external account pressures and RBI intervention in bond and currency markets. Market is pricing in rate hikes while the RBI needs to evaluate how much further support to offer amid changing macroeconomic fundamentals. And on the fiscal side, any support, if needed, has to be within the new debt to GDP framework. So the net available space and target areas need to be evaluated very closely. And all of this depends on the duration of the war and the macro impact it leaves us with. Thank you so much, Srijit, for breaking down this topic that has been on everybody's mind. I'm sure we're going to have more to talk about in the next episode. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Ahilya.
All right. We'll be back next month, everybody. Until then, stay safe.
Mutual fund investments are subject to market risks. Read all scheme-related documents carefully.